Greetings, nerds. This is Cena Nerd. I'm your host, Sarah Belmont, and with me, as always, is our Mr. Producer, Will Polk. How are you doing tonight, Will?
Doing very well, Sarah. How are you doing this Monday? Tuesday evening, actually. Yeah.
Tuesday, yeah. It has felt like a Monday all day.
Yeah, it has. In a weird way, it has felt like a Monday. Actually, my life has felt like an episode of Mr. Robot.
Which one?
I don't know if you saw in the news about the big cyber attack on the fuel pipeline that provides like a major source of fuel for the eastern United States. And so looking at it, it happened over the weekend, and it was like on 5/9, and I couldn't help but think about remember 5/9.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It was just the weirdest thing where it felt like life was imitating art.
Yeah. I'm sure that later it's going to come out how many people went and watched old episodes of Mr. Robot. Just like when the pandemic started, everyone was like, what was that movie called?
Oh, I know which one you're talking about. It's Dustin Hoffman. Yeah.
Oh my God. I'm like blanking on the name.
Yeah. I know which one you're talking about. And another one I was thinking about was the one with like Dustin Hoffman. And, it was in the mid to late 90s.
The key one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. There's that one. And then there's the Gwyneth Paltrow one. But we're not here to talk about either one of those things because that was so 2020. Yes. We actually have some 2021 news. And I'm going to start off with the headline because not because Will listed this first, but because I haven't actually watched this. but Stranger Things season 4 dropped a teaser trailer, and again, I have not watched it for some, I don't know why, Will. Just have it.
Yeah, this was one from, I guess middle of last week where I believe they dropped this particular trailer. And it really didn't say much. I mean, you probably read about it, I'm sure, on Twitter, where they're basically look like they're back at the Hawkins Research Laboratory, and it goes to a room where 11 is apparently held, and has a little clock. Hawkins Laboratory is closed until 9 a.m. or something like that. But it didn't have a release date or anything like that. It had a lot of visuals and blood splatters on the wall. Clearly, a lot of things happened in that facility, and it was kind of set in that eerie tone that Stranger Things always has. But giving anything away as far as what happened with Hopper or anybody, anything more, it really didn't have much more than just trying to save Eleven.
Yeah, which maybe that's why I haven't really remembered to go and check out that teaser trailers, because everyone came out with the same kind of overview of, oh, great, it's another season about 11, which is sad because I remember, and it's also sad that it's been so long and I haven't really missed Stranger Things. Mm. I haven't been wondering, when are we going to get the next season? Right. Even though I really liked the third season, I think both of us really liked the first and the third season. The second season, it's not that it's bad. There was just so much 11.
Yeah, yeah, true.
So much 11.
Yeah, very much so.
And that's some of the criticism of the show, is they rely so much on that character to a detriment. And so this teaser isn't really making anyone like, oh, they're doing something new.
Right, right. And it seemed like it was an origin story the way the trailer was presented. So, and of course, now that, Millie Bobby Brown is well into her teen years now, I just wonder if they'll have, if it is an origin story, clearly they'll have another actress play 11 from a younger age. But yeah, again, I think there were so many things you could read into that. But of course, Hawkins Lab is closed, as we know from the third season. So that definitely leads credence to it being a flashback to to an earlier time, perhaps.
Yeah, perhaps. Speaking about origin stories, or just another story of a challenging young girl, Miss Marvel has finished filming the show's season in Thailand. And we're expecting that to drop this year or early next year.
Right now, currently, they are planning on dropping it late 2021. So, but you know, they, you know, but that could always change, because I know Hawkeye is also supposed to fall later this year. But you know, maybe they'll do like what they've done with WandaVision and Falcon and Winter Soldier, where they'll have them back to back. Maybe time frame, you know, maybe a November, December kind of deal, or I guess late September, and maybe a break, and then go into December and maybe bleed over into next year.
Yeah, I'm hoping they're looking at something marvelous every month. You know, you got your movies that are starting to come back, and then you got these TV shows. But this is another thing. We haven't had a trailer yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm still not sure what to expect. But I mean, the shows just have been so great so far that I'm sure it's going to hold up, or it's going to do what it's supposed to do.
Yeah, I completely agree. We really haven't had, like you said, no trailers. We did have some set photos that showed Ms. Marvel in costume. And of course, as you know, last week we got the Phase 4 trailers, which did release the name of Captain Marvel 2, which is the Marvels.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so we have had some things around this film. But and of course, you know, we were introduced to grown-up Monica, who will also be in it as either Photon or Captain Marvel herself. So we'll you know, we got you know, this thing could go so many different ways, but I am looking forward to this, because like you said, I mean, out of the gate, Marvel TV on Disney Plus has been very strong. So can't imagine it not being continuing that momentum moving forward.
Yeah. And I think that MCU has learned, or Marvel has learned, they like to mess around with their release dates. So that's why the fall still seems a bit unclear, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Because even Loki had a last minute date and it's now moved up to June 9th.
Yeah, yeah. Wednesdays are the new Fridays.
I really liked Friday, but I'm not mad at this, because I feel like Wednesdays, we kind of need a pick-me-up, and we need something to kind of remind us that the end is near.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and it gives, yeah, it's like, I saw that. I was like, okay, they move things up, and it wasn't unexpected, I guess, you know, given, like you said, the way things have been moving around. And so I'm glad it didn't move it back any. So right. That seems to be the trend lately, but for obvious reasons. But this is good. And, you know, for there'll be a lot of tired people going into work on Thursday morning, but hey, it's all good.
Yeah, it's all good. Other unexpected news that isn't on our rundown, but I think you even wanted to potentially talk about. So they canceled the Golden Globes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah, they canceled the Globe and Globes, but it's been, I don't know if, you know, so earlier this year, and there's been an ongoing controversy with the Golden Globes in particular, right, not having any, I think, black voters or writers represented in the Hollywood Foreign Press Association. And I think the former, former president of the association also made some very insensitive comments as well, and he was forced out of the organization. And it things have just, you know, spiraled down quickly for them. And all the studios started pulling out of saying they were going to participate in the Golden Globes. And then NBC said, we're canceling the show. And of course, the Hollywood Foreign Press Association was like, oh, we're going to, you know, we have this timeline to fix things. But, you know, it wasn't enough for the studios. And even Tom Cruise, like, returning his statues. for in solidarity with the movement and stuff. So yeah, the Globes or NBC was like, yeah, we're canceling it. So we'll see how if somehow it.
Just when you thought award season couldn't get more strange.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or maybe this was a good thing because it'll give more credence to the SAG awards.
Yeah, I think
I always felt like why people never really paid attention to the SAGs is because you have the Golden Globes and the Oscars, and everyone always claims Golden Globes are best predictors of Oscars. So now maybe some of these other award shows can
I think you're Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're right. I mean, SAG is one that, given that it's one that is the winners are voted on upon by their peers. So it's definitely one of those things that should be higher up in the prestige factor than what it is at this point.
Yeah. The last bit of news we have to cover is Venom 2 trailer. Let There Be Carnage. Dropped. Will, are you going to see this movie?
No. I still haven't seen the first one.
Oh my god. Well, at least he's honest, ladies and gentlemen. The funny thing is, I remember liking the Venom trailer, and then I didn't end up seeing the movie. I still haven't. And, I feel the same way about this movie, is where I'm like, that's not a bad trailer. Not going to see it. Unless there's one exception, because this always, with these movies where I'm like, that's probably going to be disappointed. If people come out and they're like, no, it's actually a really good movie, or it surprised me, or something else, I'm gonna have to go see it. Because I do succumb to peer pressure. I do.
Yeah, I hear you. I was entertained by the trailer. I mean, I thought it was pretty funny with how it starts out, the symbiont making breakfast and it seemed like a horror comedy or something, the way they marketed with this trailer. But I don't know. And clearly the first film was very popular. I mean, it killed it at the box office and had a lot of positive buzz, but I've seen it come across TV and maybe watch, it's like, oh, there's Venom, and I just keep on going. I just don't know. It's just, for whatever reason, it's it's just not a film that has really like, oh, I must see this. And I really like the character of Venom. I know you and I have talked about the Spider-Man, cartoon from back in the 90s that was like so good, and it had the Parker and Eddie Brock and the Venom character in it. So I mean, I should be predisposed to like it, but I just haven't gotten around to it.
Yeah, I still don't know if that casting of Tom Hardy is good or not.
Yeah,
it's so weird. For me to see him in that, like, in a comic book role. But, all right. So I'm glad we're on the same page about that. We might not. Yeah. We like to surprise people.
Stay tuned.
We're not going to do a full roundup of CW heroes. I even intended to talk about Batwoman, and then I just realized I'd only made one note.
Yeah, well, I think that you got the... I did watch it.
I did too. I usually take extensive notes, and yet I'm like, where did Will delete my notes?
No, I didn't delete them. I saw it on the rundown, and I was like, oh, I didn't realize we were talking Batwoman this week. So
I guess, and it wasn't a bad episode.
No.
Great episode, or not great. It wasn't like, oh my god, this is season changing.
Right. The ending
but it was pretty cool to see Charlie's Angels. That's what I'm gonna call them.
Yeah, that did get that vibe from the episode this week. And basically One thing I am glad that they did not do was drag on the story too long about Sophie knowing that Ryan is Batwoman.
Right.
I'm glad they resolved it, handled it in the episode was actually very. I thought it was executed pretty well, and I did like that because it's like, okay, instead of, you know, she basically kept trying to get this whole issue of trust and everything throughout the episode was discussed, and then of course they're in with Cluemaster's quiz show pressure, you know, the game show set where he set up the pressure explosion to take out what was intended for Sophie. But, you know, Sophie basically is like, look, you can stand there and be like, play dumb and act proud, or you can like call Luke and just get, you know, reveal yourself as Batwoman. So I thought that was handled pretty well. And I'm back on the Alice, like, interesting thing again, just the way that she and the interaction that she had with Black Mask and, mm-hmm. and yeah.
That's what I'm going to call her. Claire White Mask.
Yeah.
No, I agree. The ending really allowed us to see through fruition what they intended to do with this new version mm-hmm. of Kate, not Kate, Kane. And we're starting to see things unravel. I mean, even Jacob. Storyline with Snakebite and is starting to get interwoven. So pieces are coming together. We'll see what happens as they continue on this journey. Do we know when this season's going to end?
I think they will go through the summer. So I don't think they're going to take a break from here on out, unless maybe for Memorial Day, but. But beyond that, I think they're going to end in June.
Okay, end in June. Yeah. When you said the summer, I'm like, they're going to go all the way through August?
No. No, that's not. Yeah, August is when Stargirl returns. So,
okay. Speaking about other CW shows, though, I've been keeping up with The Flash, or so I tell myself. I watched last week's episode, and then yesterday when I was looking at the rundown, I thought to myself, what the heck happened on The Flash? And then it dawned on me, oh yeah, the Frost episode, Justice episode. How do you feel they dealt with the accountability?
So, I had a problem. I think whenever we were pondering a rundown for this week, I was like, I think I had things to say about this. Because the accountability dramatics that Team Flash was going on and on about, and the morale and trying to be on their moral high horse, I couldn't help but go back to think about Joe West's speech. I think it was either season one or two, where he called them out about having their illegal holding facility in Star Labs.
Right.
With all the metas. So it just, I mean, yeah, I know it's supposed to be growth. And I know that, you know, Cisco developing the formula, I guess it was last season or season before to, you know, to end the meta powers. You know, kind of in some regards to me seemed like an extension of their little private prison. So it just seemed to me that it was a situational morality here with Team Flash, because they clearly had no qualms about being a judge jury with all the metas before. But now all of a sudden, because, oh, it's Caitlin and Frost, Killer Frost. This is all wrong. So, it tonally, it just didn't land for me right with the way that episode was executed.
Yeah, I would agree with you. It's very hypocritical. And again, the stakes has been a problem for this show since season two.
Yeah.
Season one is still perfect. Season two stakes have been a problem. And so I think it was the other week where we were talking, Flash, and you brought up accountability, and I was like, there's no way. and they kind of, like, and I don't know what's more irritating. A clear denial and, like, no, the judge found her innocent, and so she goes. Mm-hmm. Or what they did where they basically said, we're going to meet you halfway. Mm-hmm. And we're going to send her away, but we're also going to make her feel like she's standing up for something because the cop doesn't get her way in seeing that we set a precedence, which I actually thought for a moment, if they do this, the rest of the season will be very interesting with this threat of mm-hmm. metahumans who are caught breaking the law or misusing their powers will then lose their powers. I thought that was a really cool twist Central City, especially with how that could put Barry in a very vulnerable situation. And they didn't. They skirted around. And I'm like, well, what was the point?
Yeah, they punted. They punted. And it was just so frustrating that they did that because, I mean, and I know the show is not necessarily supposed to be as deep as some of the other things that we've seen as far as the WandaVisions and the Boys and all that in the genre. But I mean, when you're at this juncture in your show and you've really monkeyed around with this character, not sure how you're going to handle Frost for now, multiple seasons. You're right. I mean, I hadn't thought of that, but it really, they did create a storyline that really could have, you know, addressed that moral issue as far as what do we do with these metas and what are consequences for when metas go bad. And you know, and clearly if you do it through the court system, there is the due process of this. And so yeah, I think they had it was a real, real missed opportunity for them, story wise, because it seems that for now Frost will go off to prison, and whenever they can figure out a way to bring the character back, I'm sure they will. And you know, but for now, Daniel Panabaker gets a break from having to pull double duty in shows for at least the rest of 7A. But another thing too about stakes you mentioned, and I guess this has been, I mean, really, even though season one was perfect, from the outset when we saw that headline of the Flash disappears in the crisis, they basically set themselves up in a box that has tripped them up from day one,
right.
And so, because in the ultimate, and you really, Crisis on Infinite Earths crossover just clearly demonstrated that 1,000%, to use Winston A. Marshall's, for folks who watch SEN or Flirts in the Hood know who we're talking about, is the those stakes, because they always use a cheat code, and the cheat code in Crisis was Earth 90 Barry Allen, not right. Our Barry. And so, yeah, I always, when I saw that headline, I always thought that would be the ending of the series.
Right.
But instead, we had, you know, they have done this over and over again. And so this, and the reason why I bring this up is it's just continued with this Frost episode last week.
Yeah.
And so that's just thematically how the show goes. And at some point, it's just like me as a viewer, and especially when you have so many other things out in the content out there now, where, you know, you, like we were just saying, need to step up your game. They really need to do that because it's gotten so predictable.
Yeah. Almost as predictable as other actor or as actors of the show kind of be like, this is fun, guys, but we're seriously going to leave now, as it was also came out that Carlos and Tom are officially leaving the show at the end of this year.
Yeah. I mean, Carlos has been rumored to be leaving since season 4?
Yeah. But now he's serious.
Yeah. He's like, peace out, y'all. I'm done. Yeah, and Tom had already, I think he had already been reduced to recurring status going into season 7 to begin with. So, yeah, so I guess, you know, it's time for that character to be retired as well.
Yeah, all the Wells.
All the Wells, yeah. So,
what about Black Lightning? What has been going on in Freeland?
Yeah, so that show only has 2 episodes left this week, so it's coming to a close, but
here in America, work is in trouble. We've offshored our manufacturing, sent away good jobs, and lost so much ability to make things. American Giant is a company that's pushing back against this tide. They make high-quality clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more right here in the USA. Visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, promo code STAPLE20.
Talking about certain things that seem repetitive, Jefferson and Lynn's fighting gets repetitive from time to time, but the real thing that was... this week's episode was really good. I really, really enjoyed it because Tobias is now mayor of Freeland, but also so they had a dampening field to dampen all the powers. And so, you know, they reintroduced Khalil Painkiller back into the show. So he wasn't impacted by it. And they figured out that the Looper, who was character that they introduced early on, I think it was in season 1 or 2, was behind some of the controlling of the metas and dampening of controlling of the people who basically set up the Pierces to be arrested for Jefferson for fraud, for allegedly stealing money from Freeland High and Lynn, doing civil rights violations. And so Jefferson revealed himself to the police officer who replaced detective, his friend, and they figure out how to, you know, free the people from being controlled by the metas. So things are starting to fall apart. Jennifer, again loses someone in this episode. She made friends with another kid at the high school, and they were out on a date, and Tobias is his latest hench person attacked them, and because Jennifer's powers are still kind of wonky because of the dampening field, one of the projectiles made it through her protective shield, and so first, you know, she had lost Khalil, and then now she lost her new boyfriend. But in the process of reviewing the street cameras, Tobias realizes that the reconstituted Jennifer is, or JJ as they call her, is actually Jennifer Pierce. And so, of course, it's setting up another big showdown between Jennifer and possibly Tobias as we get closer to the finale. So they're definitely wrapping up a lot of threads. And, you know, when I realized it was like only 2 episodes left, it's like, dang, they have a lot of story that they've got to wrap up in these last 2 episodes. but overall, you know, for final seasons, they have done a good job of telling the story, keeping the show fresh and engaged, even though there's some moments that do seem repetitive. But overall, I've really enjoyed this season.
Good.
Yeah.
It hasn't. The comparisons between Black Lightning and The Flash, and sometimes it's good to make an early exit.
Even though I know ratings call CW to cancel it, but I think they are ending at a good place.
Now for a show that I'm very, it's very interesting that A, we watched it, B, Will binged it before I even watched the second episode. But Netflix dropped Jupiter's Legacy over the weekend. I think it dropped a few trailers. Wasn't getting a whole lot of buzz. But because I'm a very competitive person, after Will like bragged about him binging it, I of course had to binge it. And I'm glad I did. It's also a short season, only eight episodes. And it definitely, what I appreciated about it was it knew from the very beginning where it was going. And there was, it balanced a mystery with family drama that parallels like Shakespeare. With in context of this comic book genre. And I have a note on here of like, how do you best describe this show? Because it's not Watchmen, it's not The Incredibles, it's not Superman and Lois, but it like has bits and pieces of each one of those. And it's just, I mean, some of it, sometimes it's very contrived, but sometimes you're just like, whoa, they're going on all cylinders right now.
I think whenever I was in the process of binging it, I just, you know, checked in with you, see how you were coming along with it. And I was like, yeah, it feels a little derivative. But you're right. It doesn't fit neatly into any particular box. And I know, you know, I know last week we talked about critic score versus audience scores, it's Rotten Tomatoes, and you know, the critics killed it. I mean, it's, I think it's like 38% now with on Rotten Tomatoes, but the audience score is around 74-75%. So, you know, I personally enjoyed it. I like I said it earlier before we recorded it, it did feel like a mystery, and I think that mystery was what kept me engaged. As far as trying to figure out what was going on with these characters, and in particular, Sheldon, who is the Utopian and lead in the show, not so much in the modern day, but really the period when they went back to the 1929, and really exploring his origins and how he got powers. And what I liked about this show is they didn't do the typical superhero trope of some thing falling out of space or something, you know, some kind of thing. They did have the tragedy, which was the driving force, but the tragedy actually served the story as far as him, you know, trying to figure out what was all going on, because again, it wasn't like this his father committing suicide was drove him to be a superhero.
Right.
It was more like everybody, he was like, what the heck's going on?
Yeah. It took a lot of those familiar beats. And kind of twisted it where it wasn't enough to make it think, oh, this is really new and refreshing, but it just twisted it just enough to make it feel like familiar. Yet at the same time, they're clearly doing their own thing. They are the flash. I wasn't expecting the flashbacks. I thought I would get tired of them. The episode where I suddenly was like, I need to watch the rest of this was the third episode, all about George. I found that to be such a compelling episode. that just built on a lot of threads where it's like, okay, I have to see how this ends. The ending honestly kind of let me down just a little bit.
Yeah.
Because I'm not sure if I liked what they did, but I am excited to see the next season because I do have a lot of questions.
Oh, yeah.
I Josh Duhamel. It is so weird because during the first episode, I'm like, okay, I know Josh is old. Like, he's getting up there. He's not that old. That clearly must be makeup. And then when they started doing the flashbacks, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's makeup. And then it just felt weird. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, I don't know how to take this. Like, it's – he does a decent job of I like especially all of the scenes with his daughter.
Mm, yeah, yeah.
I think that's when he really got to escape into the character because those moments were probably the most vulnerable for that character. Mm-hmm. And so it really was him, less him kind of pretending to be this character and I guess more of an opportunity to act than in other moments.
Yeah.
But the actor who plays his brother really stole a lot of scenes.
Oh yeah. Walter and George, it's hard for me to figure out which one of the two. It's like 1 and 1A as far as my standouts from this show, this season. Because, you know, from the moment we are introduced to Walter and you know, I really the scenes that stick out to me is whenever he was trying to tell them not to, now's not the time to invest because I really need to save their money and stuff. And then seeing how their father, you know, played the Walter and Sheldon off of one another, really, you know, really established that dynamic so that whenever we did get that ending, at the end of the first season, it provides even deeper context for that. And I guess, it was probably telegraphed, but, you know, I was really, as I was watching the series, I really enjoyed that Walter dynamic with Sheldon. And also just learning like the character Brainwave, and of course every time I heard Brainwave, I did get a little thrown off because I was thinking Stargirl. Right. It's like, is there a Brainwave in like DC Comics too? But
which is funny because I didn't make that connection for some reason, but I definitely was thinking to myself, I'm like, this is pretty much Justice America or whatever they call themselves.
Yeah, JSA. Yeah,
JSA.
It felt
very similar.
Yeah, I totally got the whole JSA vibes. With the union, I guess they call themselves.
Union.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is, I think, another clever thing they did is the writers really did this thing where I feel like in the first episode, they almost zoomed in on this one hero, his wife and his kids and their power. Mm-hmm. And then as the story progresses, you slowly start to realize, no, this is a leak.
Yeah.
There are other people who are affected. They have this whole society is used to people with powers. Mm-hmm. The only thing though, is that as society has evolved with this, the good has evolved and so has the evil. Yeah. And as time goes on, that morality issue, which is another trope that we've seen played out, do you kill the villain or do you bring the villain to justice? Which the ending of the first episode, I was like, oh, they went all in on that.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Very intrigued, because that's one of the, it's a trope, but it's a good one. that I think they just, it was like an onion where they're just like, no, this is way more. And it goes beyond just Sheldon. It goes beyond just Sheldon's family. It's this entire world that's going to be affected by these choices.
Yeah, I think, you're right. That was probably, I know some critics were like, that going deep on this, the code issue and a morality play was one that's been done a lot in the genre for sure. And, and even in story, they had the famous line from Spider-Man, which I kind of, I laughed at, but they did say, look, we're going to take this on. And then when it, as the story did unfold and to your point, I felt Josh was, very wooden when he was talking about the code.
Right.
It just felt very hard, but to get through those scenes a lot of times. Yep. But at the same time, the way I thought they used a generational change in a way that serviced the story well. And it was very clear about what they were trying to achieve in the story. And, at the end of the day, I felt that was just a MacGuffin that was just sort of there.
Right.
To get things, to keep things moving. But yes, it is a core part of the show. But whenever you see the union from Generation 1.0 evolve, other members of it, like Sheldon's wife, Lady Liberty, she was like, we got to change. Fitz, the I can't remember his character's name. Fitz is his name. I can't remember his superhero name, but. He was telling his daughter, he was like, yeah, we got to, we have to change, we need, in order, the criminals, the bad guys are doing it, so we need to do it too.
Right.
I just felt that when the Utopian was talking about the code and stuff, it did slow things down.
Right. Right. I agree. I think nobody likes the hero to be like almighty and godlike and I can do no wrong and this is the right way and I say it's the right way. And I guess why I was still okay with it was because I liked how they then took characters and place them in those situations where that episode where the one of the heroes dies in Lady Liberty's arms.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then she kills.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, they went there. Yeah. Like normally what the show does is it goes on and on about the code. And then the hero finally realizes that he was wrong and then he but he doesn't break his code or whatever it was about his family around him breaking the code and how that affected him.
Yeah.
Which is something we don't see. Like that's why I kind of this is in a way is a rated R version of The Incredibles because it's one thing just to be a hero. Mm-hmm. And to grow up taking those risks and making those choices. But now you have your entire family, so your wife and children, who are not only at risk, and you're trying to protect the world, but when your wife's or son's life is on the line, what code really exists? And I think that's hopefully what they're going to explore more a little bit in the second season is because I think there's going to be some hard choices for the Utopian in the
Yeah. Season. Yeah. And you're right because they did use his family as a way to as the ones to break the code. Something that, you know, under his household. I mean, it's one thing if it's another character, but when it's, you know, people, two kids that he's raised. One, and that's the other thing too that I like, that, you know, just seeing how the code sort of shaped things in his own house.
Yeah.
Because you had, you know, had a son, Brandon, who was, you know, wanted to, you know, follow in his father's footsteps. And then, of course, you have Chloe, who I thought was another character I liked as well. The typical rebellious teen, you know, child and go out and does her own thing. But then, you know, but then how she has to deal with being the kid of the utopian, and how mm-hmm. she dealt with that. Like whenever the guy was hooking up with her, you know, first he seemed all innocent, like, you know, just really just wanted to get to know her as a person. But then after, you know, the morning after he's like, hey, can you put a word in? and you know, get. It really was like, it was one of those things, like, got into the access and celebrity of superhero-dom that we see in The Boys, for example.
Right.
And how Chloe basically was just trying to run away from all that, even to the point where she didn't have a crazy superhero name or costume or anything like that. So, you know, so the show really hit on a lot of good things, and opened up a lot of interesting places where they can go for hopefully a season two if they get renewed. Because the other thing that I thought too, that to your point with the choices, is at the end of the series, at the end of season one, mm-hmm. and the final episode where he's facing off with Dark Star mm-hmm. or Black Star. About to say Dark Seed, but anyway, he had that moral choice with trying to save Brandon or hold on to the code.
Right.
And, you know, there was an assist that kind of gave him a cheat code so he didn't have to make that choice.
Right. But, oh yeah. They, yeah.
So I was a little miffed about that in some regards, but at the same time, I'm like, well, you know, clearly they're going to have to go to season two and they're going to, you know, if they solve the answer right then and there, then, you know, that's it. We don't have a season two.
Right. I mean, this show is it very much felt like half of a season. Mm-hmm. And that's why I really want to see season two, because there is a clear trajectory here. And I want to finish the rest of the story, because I think we're at a halfway point to you. Yeah. Because I thought the same thing. That being said, I was also kind of just like, okay, let's get back to the more interesting fight that's going on with the mine.
Yeah.
that was a lot more interesting and turns out a lot more to the plot of the show. But and that to some degree is what I really liked about the finale, is that it tied up just enough loose ends while leaving so many more doors open.
Oh yeah.
Because we keep talking about mystery and how the show really did a good job with mysteries, is, and why I think I like George's character so much, is because we hear about why he's not around in present day. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of surprised that we didn't get an entire flashback or more information about everything that happened.
Right.
And I'm sure that's to come in season two. And I really want to understand, especially with some of the reveals that mm-hmm. are spoken about during the finale. And you're just like, okay, wait, what?
Yeah.
Okay. I need to have everything actually shown.
Yeah, show me now.
Yeah. Let me make sure I understand correctly what happened. But
yeah.
I like how they made you think it would be one mystery and then said, no, we're not here to tell that story quite yet.
Right.
But
right.
We're glad you're intrigued.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, maybe that's why some folks just did not like it, because we got the mystery kind of thing with, you know, or people try to build, you know, the mysteries with for example, WandaVision, and it's a known universe and known characters and things that, oh, it's got to be such and such person, or it's got to be this, that, or the other. You know, for a lot of people in the genre, you know, Jupiter's Legacy is not one that, you know, it's not a house, for many folks, it's not a household story,
right,
or known quantity, even though a lot of people do know about it. And I did see where, because of this show, the back issue prices have gotten inflated a bit, as far as people want, you know, trying to learn more about it. But I think, you know, given that they opened so many doors with the show and really opened a lot of doors as far as storylines, it really, you know, I think this first season was all about the setup. And like you said, it felt like almost like half the season, and we just got to the mid-season finale, and then we'll come back and get the rest of the story when they come back for season two.
Right. Yeah. Well, on that note, Will, why don't you tell our listeners where they can find you?
Yes, you can find me at Will M. Polk. That's WILLMPOLK.
And you can find me at SJ Belmont, SJBELMONT. Please follow our crew on Twitter at Scene and Nerd. Friend us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram. But most importantly, rate, subscribe, comment on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, Google Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Good night, Geek Out. You're welcome.